This is an iHeart podcast.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, final hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday, and Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. We're going to talk in just a second about why don't we win wars anymore? We were talking about World War II and some guy's mad. Why don't we win like that anymore? Why isn't DeSantis on Trump's VP list? Someone wants to know. Quesadillas. Why did the Nazis go? Why did so many of the Nazis go to South America after WW2? All that and so much more coming up this hour on the world famous Jesse Kelly Show. Okay, so let's deal with this really quickly. What the guy was lamenting, hey, we have Korea and Vietnam and Iraq, Afghanistan. We won the war. We won World War II. We won. Okay, well, first of all, let's look at that. We won World War II, no question. We won it. Now, why did we win it? There's a lot of reasons, of course. The bravery of the men, America's economy, all the allies, all kinds of reasons why we won World War II. But really, the truth might just come down to this simple concept. And it sounds stupid, just stay with me. We wanted to win it. We wanted to win it. We were fighting World War II to win it. We intended to win outright. Do you know that the Japanese overall strategy in World War II, it's been lamented by many, many, many people, including myself, of how could they be so stupid? Why would they attack Pearl Harbor? Then you just get America after you. That ruined everything for them. Why would they be so dumb? How could they be so dumb? It's been thought of as the biggest strategic blunder in world history. It's that big of a deal. Who would just attack America out of nowhere? But if I may play devil's advocate for a moment, you could argue it was a pretty sound strategy that didn't work. And here's why. The Japanese plan was this: attack Pearl Harbor, cripple our Pacific Fleet, long enough to give them time to fortify all these places they wanted to take, the Philippines and everything else that had all the natural resources they wanted. Then once they fortify it, they weren't stupid. They knew we were going to attack. Okay, so America's going to attack. We got that. We attack them. They're going to attack. They're going to be mad, blah, 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 blah. But eventually, America is going to sue for peace. Or if the war goes bad for us, if I'm saying us as the Japanese, if the war goes bad for us, let's say those Americans are winning a lot, we can sue for peace. And in the end, if we sue for peace, and let's say even America only lets us keep 10% of all the things we've taken, all the parts of China and everything else, hey, yeah, we lost some life and whatnot, but in the end, we are better off than we were before the war. And that was a fairly reasonable assumption when you looked at most of the history of warfare. In the history of warfare, look, we talk about the extreme examples all the time. We talk about Rome burning down every single inch of Carthage and every man, woman, and child they didn't murder, sold off into slavery. We talk about things like that because it completely eliminated an entire people. Gone. But that's not the norm for war throughout history. The norm is battles, couple big ones. Ah, dang, it didn't go our way. Hey, sorry, my bad. Let's sue for peace. Let's work this out. You can have some of my territory. My bad. I'll pay you some money. Suing for peace had been really how nations had fought it forever. And Japan assumed that that's how America would handle it. Maybe they win a bunch, maybe we win a bunch, but in the end, we'll sue for peace and work it out. they didn't really understand, and this is really their strategic fault. They did not understand the anger that would come from the sucker punch aspect of Pearl Harbor. They did sucker punch us on purpose. They attacked before they declared war. They, of course, acted like they didn't. Oh, whoops. Did you guys not get the memo? Oh, dang. Was that a half hour late? They did that on purpose. They wanted to use the element of surprise and whatnot, and all that stuff's fine. As I've said many, many, many times before, if you're about to get in a fight with a guy you can't take and you want to sucker punch him, be my guest. It's certainly a strategy. You better put him down, son, because people remember a sucker punch a lot longer than they remember I lined up against you. You hit me in the face. If you and me, we have a problem and we go fight, not that I would anymore, I'm too old, but if we got in a fight, okay, that's fine. Hey, I'll meet you out behind the gym. We'll go scrap it out. By the time we're done, we'll probably be friends, especially as dudes. That's usually how it works. You go throw hands, bloody lip, busted up knuckle. Hey, man, good fight. Hey, there's a mutual respect there. I can't count on me guys I got in a fight with that I was best friends with later on. That's just how it works. You sucker punch somebody? You come up behind me and drill me in the back of the head? We're enemies for life. They really underestimated that aspect of it. Anyway, back to the question. We fought that war to win that war, period. No, there will be unconditional surrender. You've heard that term about World War II a million times. That is abnormal. That was not how wars had been fought. That's how we fought Japan. Nope. Yeah, but can we say, nope. Well, what if we were to just keep the emperor? Nope. Unconditional surrender. You get no conditions. You get nothing you want. You come grovel at my feet or I will bomb every city in your country to ash. And we did. Now, that same resolve has not carried over to any of the wars we've fought since because, well, there's a variety of reasons, but being clear-eyed about victory and our objective and being attacked like that is not necessarily something that's happened since. And now maybe you're sitting there saying, well, 9/11. Okay, that's fair. However, because 9/11 was done by a terrorist organization, you couldn't pin it on a nation state. We were never at war with Afghanistan. We just were not. We wanted to defeat the Taliban in Afghanistan. We wanted to kill everyone in Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. But we didn't march into Afghanistan telling them, you will all submit and surrender now or there will be no more Afghanistan. We never once approached it that clear-eyed. And the thing about warfare, the whole history of warfare shows this. You can be more powerful and mighty and bigger armies and better technology and whatnot. You have to want to win. We haven't fought it like we wanted to win. And even worse, as America got more and more bleeding heart and useless, we started worrying when we did win. Whenever we would find victories here or victories there, if it wasn't done the right way, even though that, who came up with that crap? How do you fight war the right way? If it wasn't done the right way, then immediately you'd have half the politicians, the general public, journalists are dogging on you. If you aren't fighting a war with a clear-eyed purpose, I am the good guy, that's the enemy, he's the bad guy, I will win and he will die. If that is not your mentality when you fight a war, you will not win it. And we have not fought a war in that way since World War II. That's just the fact. And that's why it confuses people, because our military is so advanced. And honestly, post-World War II, our military got better. Technologically, better organization, just better. But where are the W's? Why didn't we win in Vietnam? Well, we were trying to just kind of tie in Vietnam. I just don't, hey, North, look, you're our enemy and whatnot, but we just don't want you to take the South. Oh, we could have won Vietnam with the warriors we sent over there. Hey, North, If we step in here, you'll cease to exist. Sound good? Back off. We never approached it that clear-eyed. You can't win that way. You send your guys into the meat grinder, and you get what you get. All right. We're moving on. I want to talk about other things. America. Let's talk about some American politics. Let's, speaking of Vietnam, you know, I bring up Pure Talk a lot. I tell you, their CEO is a veteran, Vietnam veteran. Pure Talk has partnered with America's Warrior Partnership. And America's Warrior Partnership, they're the ones out there making sure our veterans are taken care of. Our veterans don't get the medical care. They have trouble with the VA. America's Warrior Partnership steps in and says, hey, we'll handle the VA for you. Our veterans, they can't find work. I don't know what to do. I'm lost. My credit card debt. But America's Warrior Partnership, they're the ones stepping in, stepping alongside our veterans and helping them. When you switch to Pure Talk, that's all you have to do. You don't have to do anything special. You switch to Pure Talk, same great service. Keep your phone, keep your number. Your bill gets cut in half, and you know that you're supporting a company that actually loves this country, unlike those other garbage commie cell phone companies. Pick up your phone, dial #250 and say Jesse Kelly and switch to Pure Talk. No better time than now. Just had the anniversary of D-Day. #250, say Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
I like it.
Returns next.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday, and Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. Did you hear what James Comey had to say? They were asking him, so how could they even put Trump in prison? These people are dreaming about it.
So a lot of people have suggested that there are a range of factors that would make it difficult to put a former, the system has not been tested in this way. Do you agree with that, that it would be difficult or nearly impossible for the law enforcement institutions to put him in actual jail?
No, they would just put him in a double wide somewhere out near the fence, out in the grass. And he would eat there, he'd shower there, he'd exercise there, he'd be away, as Danya Perry said, from general population, but it's obviously doable.
I'm not 100% sure these people aren't planning on it. I told you for the longest time they're going to. Then the Georgia thing fell apart and the D.C. thing got delayed. But, man, in New York, I guess it could happen. Golly, what, we live in some wild times. Hey, Jesse, please explain why DeSantis is not on Trump's list for VP. All right, let me explain something to a bunch. We've had this talk before. Let me have it again. And you may find this talk to be offensive or upsetting if you're a hardcore Trump fan or hardcore DeSantis fan or something like that. Just keep in mind, if you're upset, I don't care. All right? Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis do not like each other at all. I know that you are all, well, if you are one of these people who's just all about the cause, you're all about America. You're not waving anyone's pom-poms. You just want America to win and everyone to come together and defeat Joe Biden. And I would argue that's probably likely what you are. Then you can take a dispassionate look at this and say, wait a minute. Trump, he's only got 4 years left, even if he wins. He needs a strong VP. DeSantis has this incredible record in Florida of kicking the crap out of the left. The Republicans now dominate Florida. Why not just bring in DeSantis? From a dispassionate point of view, you are correct. If you have that thought, I'm not saying it's a stupid thought. It's a very smart thought. However, you are taking out the human element. This is not a game of chess. There are people involved here. Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump despise each other. They absolutely despise each other. And I'm not telling you something I think. I know many, many people in both camps right next to both of them. I am telling you what I know. Ron DeSantis thinks Donald Trump is a moderate, not a conservative, not on the right. He thinks he's a moderate, idiot blowhard who hires morons and is incapable of actually accomplishing anything to destroy the left. That is what Ron DeSantis thinks about Donald Trump. Donald Trump thinks Ron DeSantis is governor of Florida because of him. He thinks when Ron DeSantis jumped into this primary, he thinks Ron DeSantis knifed him in the back like Judas Iscariot. Donald Trump thinks Ron DeSantis is a traitor and a disloyal backstabber and hates him for that. These two men despise each other. They are half playing footsie now because DeSantis made a pledge that he would endorse Trump and he would help him. So he's throwing him a fundraiser, raising him a little money, came out and endorsed him. But you notice you haven't seen them on stage anywhere? You notice that? You notice even as recently as, I think it was last week, Donald Trump was still giving speeches, bragging about how badly he attacked DeSantis in the primary. I don't care whether you love or hate that. I don't think I've ever seen that before. Because once you win a primary, the goal is always you play nice with everyone, even if you were just throwing poop at each other. Whenever you finish a primary, everyone kind of pretends, especially the winner, because he's the one who has to build the coalition. He always pretends like none of that ever happened. Ron's the best guy. Even if he hates his guts, you never take shots at him. Trump's still attacking him publicly. Trump took this primary more personally than you can possibly imagine. You know who Bob Good is? Probably don't. Most people don't. He's a congressman. You should know who he is. He's the chairman of the House Freedom Caucus. You know, the only decent people in Congress. He is hardcore anti-communist. If he's to get in the White House, it would be critical for him to have someone like Bob Good in Congress to help fight for him and push his agenda forward. But Bob Good, he was a DeSantis endorser in the primary. Trump is trying to primary Bob Good. Bob Good might be the best member of Congress. Trump handpicked a candidate and endorsed him to run against him. That's how personally Trump took that primary. There's not going to be a coming together. And I don't care which side you blame. I don't care if you're offended or mad about anything I just said. What I just told you is a fact. There is bad, bad, bad blood there. And you can point all the fingers you want. I don't give a crap. DeSantis would never in a million years agree to be Donald Trump's vice president, and Trump in a million years would never ask him to be vice president. That's just a fact. We look at these things because we want to save the country, right? We just want, hey, everyone come together. Let's beat Biden. That's how most people think. We look at these things like chess pieces, and we take out the human element. The human element is real. And it matters a lot. All right? All right. Sorry to burst your bubble on that. We have a lot more. Hang on.
Truth. Attitude. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday. And ask Dr. Jesse Friday. And it has been such a great day. Always keep this in mind.
You know, freedom is not free.
What, Chris? What? Did that confuse you? Allow me to clear it up for
this
you.
This is not an attempt to ban TikTok. It's an attempt to make TikTok better. Tic-tac-toe. A winner. A winner.
A winner, Chris. Something you'll never be. Dr. Jesse, what's the proper way to prepare a quesadilla? This is actually my specialty. So, Chris? Stay with me. Here's what you do. You want to make the perfect quesadilla? You want to prepare the perfect quesadilla? You roll down your window and you tell Taco Bell, I would like a chicken quesadilla with extra jalapeno sauce. That's how you do a quesadilla. Or if you really feel like up in your game, really, it's not well known, the steak quesadilla from T-Bell will change your life. Chris, have you had it? Oh, you people can't eat that. Michael, have you had the steak quesadilla? Oh, it's legit, isn't it? Yeah, see that? Oh man, I'm excited. This might be a legit question, this guy says. World War II, what did Mexico do? Central South America, what was happening there during the war? Everyone who pays attention knows the Nazi leaders escaped to Argentina. Why? Why did the Nazi leaders escape to Argentina? This is a famous story for those who know. There are many, 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 many Nazis who made their way down to Argentina. then to this day, there are some very white communities down there in Latin America. A lot of blonde-haired, blue-eyed people down in Latin America. Okay, well, allow me to explain, and this may ruffle some feathers. Nevertheless, it is true. First, Argentina Catholic. Okay, that's going to come into play here in a moment. Argentina Catholic. Argentina also, their leader at the time, they were admirers of fascism, Hitler and Mussolini. Argentina, there was a real relationship there. Now, World War II kicks off. Argentina obviously didn't get involved. Not that they could have helped anybody anyway if they did, but Argentina didn't get involved. They did, however, open up lines of communication, create what essentially amounted to a pipeline between Germany and Argentina. And you want to hear something ironic? In some parts of Latin America, this applied to Jews as well. Germanic Jews, society wasn't getting all that nice to them. This is before the war, before the Holocaust started, when they were starting to dump on them. Hey, wear an armband, all that stuff. Some Jews were looking to get out, understandably so. Many of them went down to Argentina, went down to Latin America. There was a pipeline there, a good relationship between the countries. Hey, kind of like a kind of the skids are greased if you want to leave Germany and come down to Argentina. Now, towards the end of the war, when a lot of the Nazis, the Adolf Eichmann types, when they were reading the tea leaves, it didn't take a genius to figure out the Nazis were going to lose the war. Anybody with half a brain knew the Nazis were going to lose the war as soon as they lost at Stalingrad. So we're talking 1941. It was early when it was obvious the Nazis would lose the war. As soon as they lost in Stalingrad and started having to push back towards Germany, it was just a matter of how it was going to end. So towards the end, some of them started to read the tea leaves, and they found some very welcoming arms down in Argentina. And the Catholic Church got involved. Various cardinals, they sheltered Nazis and created fake names, fake passports for them, and got them, smuggled them out of ports in places like Spain. A lot of Nazis were actually smuggled out of Spain. They smuggled them out of ports like Spain. Hey, here's a boat, here's a bed, here's three hots and a cot. In a couple weeks, you're going to be in Argentina. And there was a Nazi to Latin America pipeline. Remember, Dr. Mengele, you've heard of Dr. Mengele, I assume. If you have not, he is one of the barbarians of history. I took my family to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. one time. That's one of those things everyone needs to do. My sons were too young when we took them, so I'm going to take them again. We're going to do a D.C. trip. I've told you we're history geeking out here. It is something everyone needs to do. Really, really, really well done. But you can see a lot of this there. Mengele, he was the doctor at the death camps. He would stand there as they were unloading the Jews off the train tracks, and he would pick the ones he wanted to experiment on. If you were twins or something like that, he would take you and he would do, I'm not gonna go into it here. It's Friday, it's too dark, it's too ugly. You can go look it up yourself. It was really, really, really bad. Well, they never got him. He whisked on out of Germany, and eventually, if memory serves me, I believe he had a stroke when he was swimming in the ocean as an old man, had a stroke and drowned as he was swimming in the ocean. They never got him. Guy got never stood trial, never anything. Eichmann, Adolf Eichmann, that's a fascinating story. Maybe we should do one time. The Israelis tracked him down. They found him in Latin America. I think it was Brazil, but it might have been Argentina. I haven't read that story in a while. They flat out tracked him down, found out where he lived. And one of those things straight out of the movies, covert ops, knocked him out, tossed him in the back of a van. Eichmann finds himself on a plane heading back to Israel to be put on trial for war crimes. Yeah, it was one of those cool stories. Yeah, good job, Chris. I know you weren't involved, but I feel like by osmosis or something. I'm not sure how that works. Anyway, it was one of the cool stories. Oracle, can you explain why the commies hopelessly maintain blue cities and deep red states? I live in Fort Lauderdale. that's as blue and rainbow as any city could be. I would think they would pack up and head to a blue state. Why do they stay when the odds are greatly against
them? Why are you gay?
The communist only sees things he hasn't conquered yet. That's one. Two, these states, these red states, have made a terrible mistake. Now, Florida is starting to get this better than the other states, to be honest. Surprise, surprise. Florida's doing this better. But red states with these blue cities in them, red states are run by who? Republicans. Republicanism is beyond the low T stuff. It tends to be more what you'd consider conservative or libertarian, limited government, right? So when you have a red state with a blue city in it, yeah, the state government doesn't like it, but hey, it's not really our business. It's not our jurisdiction. Hands off. And so you have a, quote, red state like Texas. There's a pride parade in Dallas or Austin every daggone day. BLM protests the works because red states still believe in this laissez-faire, live and let live attitude. They should be smashing these blue cities. Red state legislatures should be passing laws to make life impossible for these communist cities. But they don't. They don't. You ask why the blue cities don't leave? Because the red states don't make it hard for them to be there. So these blue cities turn into these little dirty communist fortresses, and they're very, very, very comfortable there. Now, they're mad about their state government, but when you're a red state allowing a blue city to exist like that, you're allowing a brain tumor to just sit there and grow. Again, as we've talked about many times before, including tonight, you have to be aggressive with communists. You cannot be hands-off with them. You cannot be live and let live with them. You must push them back from the walls, or they will eventually erode you, all right? Now, let me tell you about preparation. After all, old WW3's in the news.
I'm not going to walk away from you. I apologize for the those weeks of not knowing what's going to happen in terms of funding.
In case you're wondering what this is our very eloquent, very energetic president speaking with Vladimir Zelensky as he hands him another $250 million of your money.
Because we had trouble getting the bill that we had to pass that had the money in it from some of our very conservative members who were holding it up. But we got it done finally. And since then...
Do you have your three-month food kit yet? Are you prepared for an EMP? You know what an EMP over space would do to your area? Grocery store, gone. Everything electronic, gone. Your car, gone. How long can you and your family live on the food that is in your home? You don't have a car. You don't have a grocery store to get to if you did have a car. My Patriot Supply sells three-month emergency food kits. Everyone who lives in your home needs one. It's not just now more than ever. You just need one, always. Buy it, stash it, forget about it, pray you never need it. They got them $200 off right now at preparewithjessekelly.com. Do I need to remind you we're shooting missiles into Russia? Preparewithjessekelly.com. We'll be back.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Final segment of the Jesse Kelly Show. Remember, if you miss me, if you want to talk to me, yell at me, love on me. No, quit. Don't love on me. You can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Don't forget, if you miss any part of the show, you can download a podcast of it, iHeart, Google, or iHeart, Spotify, and iTunes. Chris, that Google thing is going to stay in my head for ages now. It's not on Google. Don't look there. Also, I promised you a brief Midway talk, so let's do this. It's going to be very, very brief because this is anniversary of Midway as well, June 4th to the 7th or 5th through the 7th. I forget. I think it's 4th through the 7th. Anyway, Battle of Midway. It was considered by many to be the turning point in the war. I would probably argue that point, but Japan was coming for Hawaii. Did you know that? I don't mean attacking Pearl Harbor. Japan had plans to invade Hawaii. You know Japan did invade Alaska? Did you know that? They took a couple islands up there in Alaska. No one knows about it because there wasn't that much fighting and whatnot, but Japan was coming. Japan believed in playing offense. We had a tremendous advantage over the Japanese in the war, one that they didn't really realize until far too late. We kept cracking their codes. You know, they have to communicate by radio and whatnot, and we kept cracking their codes. It's how we assassinated Yamamoto. That's another fascinating story I should probably tell you for another day. Do you know we assassinated the general who planned the Pearl Harbor attack? It's a really cool story. Anyway, I'll tell you that another time. But we cracked their codes, and one of the biggest problems with cracking their codes was, what do you act on? We have little bits of information here, little bits of information there. Well, we do, because you know, when you crack a code, you don't get the whole memo. You'll get little bits and pieces. So how much do you have? What do you think you can use? Is this a distraction? And if we act on this information, are they going to then know that we cracked the code? You have to always be worried about that. Our code breakers figured out that the Japanese were going to attack Midway Island. I know you're going to find this absolutely stunning, but it's called Midway Island because it's midway in the Pacific between us and them. Yeah, no, it's just some little spit of nothing. It's just some little sandbar, for lack of a better way to put it. But it's Midway Island. We knew they were going to attack it. We sent our naval fleet over there to wait. I say offshore, but it makes it sound like if you were on Midway and you looked out, you'd see a bunch of aircraft carriers. No. It was nothing like that. We were waiting close enough to Midway Island, and we essentially did a large-scale ambush of their fleet when they came to attack Midway Island. They had no idea we were there. We came dive-bombing out of nowhere, and it really is a great story. And I'll tell you something. Hollywood actually did a decent movie on it. It's not the best movie you've ever seen in your life. Let me just clarify. It's really not. But I remember it being okay for kids. It was certainly okay for my boys, called Midway. This is just in the past few years. If you want, yeah, Chris, it's really not bad. It's worth a watch and fairly historically accurate. If you want an entertaining way to show yourself or your kids Midway, and they go into some of that code breaking and some of the bravery of the insane pilots who fought in Midway, that's worth doing. Those dive bomber pilots, torpedo pilots, fighter pilots, the pilots in World War II were so insanely brave. The torpedo pilots, those guys, it's actually very sad for me because our torpedoes were garbage at the beginning of the war. It was a huge national controversy. Half the time they wouldn't go off or they'd sink too deep. It was just a crappy torpedo. It didn't work. And to be a torpedo pilot was the most dangerous thing in the world because you had to fly real low and fly parallel to the water, real low to the water and straight at a ship. So they were always getting shot, and those guys were getting shot and they didn't even have a working torpedo. You'd drop a torpedo and it would just bounce off the side of the ship or something like that. We had guys, including at Midway, you'd send out 40 torpedo planes and none of them came back. All of them gone. Very fascinating story, but highly, highly, highly recommend. All right.
And now...
here's a headline.
By the, go, you know the thing.
Emails!
We didn't get to.
Hey, Jesse. Do you think we have to take out the cartels in Mexico before we start our mass deportation? They just elected a socialist woman, and their last leader, I believe, said he wouldn't do anything about the cartels. The cartels need to be dismantled. Thoughts? And he asked me to play the bar. The cartels need to be dismantled. That's what you said. And it's not that I disagree, but we have to be careful simplifying things that are not necessarily simple. The cartels, there are many, many, many of them. There's not one, two, three, four, or five. There are many of them. They control half of the states of Mexico. When we say take out the cartels, we picture movies or books like Clear and Present Danger, where they're all just going to gather in a mansion for a big fiesta one day and we'll just drop a bomb on it. That's not how it works. These people are ingrained in the community. They are, for lack of a better way to put it, the government of a lot of these communities. If you need a new school, the cartel will build one for you. Hospitals. Hey, we're having a wedding. Oh, cool. We'll throw the wedding for you. And I'm not acting like they're good guys, but they are woven into so much of the community down there. We think we can just, hey, send in Delta Force and go pop a couple guys in the face and we'll kill the cartels. If you wanted to eliminate the cartels in Mexico, anyone saying that to you, they're being dishonest or they're an idiot, because it would take essentially conquering Mexico to destroy the cartels. It would. As long as there is a market for drugs and human trafficking and all those things, and there's always a market for those things, there are going to be criminal organizations down there who are willing to facilitate such things. All right? All right. I only had time for one of these emails. That didn't work out. You put your phone down and enjoy your weekend, okay? We'll do it again on Monday. That's all.
This is an iHeart podcast.